for joining A View Beyond the Ordinary. I'm your host, Jolene Lenz. I share some transformational stories and really simple strategies to help you connect with your inner wisdom and unlock greater freedom, creativity, joy, and meaning in your life. Ready to embrace your unique essence? Let's get started and tune in. I want to thank everybody for joining me today, and I want to thank our guest today, Lachlan Hewson, for being here. So Lachlan, welcome.
Thank you.
I'd love to start, Lachlan. I'm going to share a little bit about you with the audience. So for those of you who do not know him, Lachlan actually professionally is the founder of 4D Resources Advisory, a financial advisory and consulting firm that uses dynamic financial modeling to help boards, executives, and investors make better decisions for mergers and acquisitions, capital raising, investments, and risk analysis. And in addition to that, actually, the reason I have Lachlan here today and what we're going to chat about is he is also an author of a book, a best-selling book, and it's called Walkabout to Wisdom. And I've been reading it, as you see my highlighter still in there. So I've been taking some notes throughout this book, Lachlan, but it's really about your journey that you took a number of years ago after 9/11 happened. It sounds like you were based, well, you were, as I read your story, we're based at the time in New York. And that was the catalyst for you to go on a walkabout back to where you grew up, which is Australia. And I would love to have you share a bit more, maybe start there with what led you down the path to take this huge walkabout.
I think that's what's interesting about life and what we'd been speaking about previously is sometimes certain events come up that you can't really explain, but you're willing to trust the nature of a change and the timing of a change, even though it may not make sense from an intellectual perspective, is something that's actually a lot more critical from at a soul level or an emotional level. And that's really what drove that decision. And so I remember after September 11th, everybody was very shocked. I was working at Bear Stearns, and we were called into the office of one of the senior directors. And he said, "Look, Lachlan, we've decided to let go of your whole group, but we would like for you to stay, and we would like to give you an opportunity to work somewhere else within the organization." And at that point, I was on a work visa, so if I lost my job, then I had to leave. And it was really interesting that in that moment, and I was looking out his window, and I remember it was just a pristine, stunning fall blue sky outside. And I was looking through his window, and as he was talking, all of these emotions and thoughts came out of nowhere. And I hadn't thought about this for a long, long time. And as I sat there listening to him talking about the opportunity and what I would be able to do, and he said, "Lachlan, you know, would you like to stay and do something else?" My sense was, and I said, "That's really kind of you, thank you, but I think it makes sense to leave." And that decision came about in the fraction of an instant. And that the message that I was hearing was, it's time for you to go home. It's time for you to go back and connect with what you knew as a child, the energy you knew, the who you are as a human being and how you want to be in the world. And I knew from my time in New York that it's an incredibly draining occupation. Banking, investment banking takes a lot of energy. And it wasn't something I'd fully appreciated when I started. And so after 7 odd years of work, the chance to recharge, the chance to go back and really connect with what is at the core of my essence made complete sense. And yet it was a thought that just popped up at a moment. And
you heeded the call. I was going to say you heeded the call. Most of us don't always do that. And you made it, as you just mentioned, in a split moment. I also read in the book, you felt like it was a siren call back to nature.
Exactly. And for me, the natural world, for want of a better word, has always been my God. Even as a young child, mum and dad would send me off to church, and I would go to Sunday school. But the best part of a Sunday was either having my little fire before Sunday school and boiling my quart pot or my billy and making some tea, or once I'd come back from Sunday school, being able to get dressed in jeans and boots and head out into the bush in the remote mining towns where I lived and just look at rocks and plants and explore the creeks and go fishing. And so for me, nature has always been that thing, for want of a better word, that I always go back to. And it was at that time that I felt that was, it really was a siren call to go back to the essence and almost start again in a sense.
And you, it sounds like too, your father was a mining engineer. So you grew up also living in incredible remote locations all over Australia. And when you went back there, and it sounds like, were you gone, did I hear you say 7 years you had been away from Australia?
Exactly, in terms of business school and then working, yes.
Okay, so you go back on this new adventure without a job. You had a four-wheel drive, so just to share with the audience, it sounds like you did have a car, which you drove, you know, throughout, and you have quite a map you showcase in your book, which is great for those of us that haven't been to Australia, of where your route takes you. And did it just unfold organically? Talk to us a little bit about what led you to go from A to B to all the different locations.
It was completely random, and to me it was almost a metaphor that I've come back to again and again, of just trusting the journey, of obstacles in a way, or a little whisper from somebody else, or even a whisper from the breeze or from the universe as to, do I turn to the left or do I turn to the right? And so the first part of it was very structured. I got a job working on a small horse property. I love being around horses. I love working with horses. And so that was really where it started. But once I left that and started to travel, the best thing was you would go in a direction and you would end up at a campsite and you would start to speak with other backpackers and other people traveling around. And they would tell you of places to visit and they would tell you of experiences they had. And so the journey evolved very organically. And so it went from having a structured path of the when and the where and the how to very much just listening to what people were telling me and embracing the excitement and the curiosity that came with going to different places at different times, meeting different people, at some point being part of their journey, at other times going your own way. And so it was a very organic, unstructured journey that was really just based on what sounded right and felt right at the time.
Oh, I love that. And you call something that your tent and your sleeping bag, your swag.
Yes.
So going with your swag, and you ate, when I read about what you were eating, I will say it didn't sound luxury, Lachlan. Cans of tuna, beans, etc. And you did this for quite a bit. So you were out there in the outback for what, 2 years?
So in overall around 18 months, part of that, 9 months of that, or sorry, 6 months of that was also spent working on a cattle station. And so that was a little more structured, even though every day was a brand new day. But for the most part, you're right. It was canned tuna, four bean mix, the odd glass of cask red wine as a treat, when that made sense. And just really, that was what I wanted to do. My time in New York, the lifestyle I had been living there, I didn't know it at the time, and it's only with hindsight, but it's so easy to fall into a destructive lifestyle, or at least one that isn't optimal or healthy for us. And so part of what I wanted to do during my travels was just really was let my body detox, my mind and my body, my heart and my soul, just let them detox. And so from a physical perspective, keeping the nutrition really simple, really healthy, not seeing this as a culinary journey, but almost some sort of a very basic type of a journey that was focused more on healing in all four ways. And so that's why I kept my diet very simple and just drank lots and lots of water. hydrating, flushing toxins. That was really the nature of a lot of the experience.
I am guessing you mentioned too in the book that you felt a bit out of balance, prior to leaving, physically, spiritually, emotionally. You do touch on that in the book. How long into your journey would you say that you realized, oh my gosh, because you just said hindsight, looking back, now you see things that you didn't see before. Was it 6 months in, maybe a year, where you went, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was this bad?
I think it was 3 months in when I realized that I had done things to myself that if I'd known better, I wouldn't have done. And then that was really the catalyst for becoming a lot more focused on how can I detox? And so that was, but they're really simple things. So one of the other things, or a term I came to really appreciate, which I use quite a lot, is I developed a new med. And so my med was meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep. And so they were the meds that I really wanted to focus on taking the whole journey. And that was really that's probably the best way to answer your question. And so meditation became part of every day. And part of that was, yes, meditating, but also trying to be a lot more reflective of seeing different places, swimming in a gorge, walking up through the ranges, of just appreciating everything that was there for what it was and seeing the beauty in it as it was, rather than trying to have to reconfigure it to something that made a lot more sense.
Right. And I'm curious because you have a financial background. So, we utilize our left side of the brain analytically to figure things out. I have an accounting degree by background, but for you to make a move like this and then meditate, one of the things I found with the help of meditation is an ability to connect to what I call my higher self and a presence that I know that I believe is God. Some may call it a universal love vibration out there, but were you, when you had the opportunity to meditate like this daily and really reconnect to yourself, it sounds like this journey was a much deepening into a side of you, I'm sure, Lachlan, that, and we'll find out more as I ask questions about what you uncovered. But would you say intuitively that you strengthened that muscle? Because I do believe it's almost a muscle we use.
Completely. And so the way I think about it is we have our egoic self and then we have our true self. And that was how I started to really think about the dynamic nature between living in this world, learning how to do the things that give us the success we want and need to have a house, to have a car, to have a 401k, to be able to function in the human world that we've created. But then it's also really important to listen to that true self or that more intrinsic self, which I think really helps you understand the who. I feel the egoic self helps us understand the how to do things, but in terms of the who, what, and why, that was much more an intrinsic self or a true self. And so you're right. It was clearing your mind to let those two parts almost have their own dialogue independent of me as they figured out, well, how do we work together rather than one having to work at the expense of the other? And so I felt coming out of this whole journey, one, they were a lot more in balance. And two, it also made a lot more sense to listen to the true self a lot more, which is how I've sort of develop my horse health business and why I spend a lot of time doing that. And that's really where balance comes from. We have to be in the world and survive in the world, but we also have to do it in a way that resonates with who we intrinsically are. And so finding that balance between egoic self and true self, that was probably one of the most important experiences that came out of the whole journey.
Beautiful. And I, when I went through a similar, and it wasn't taking a walk about, but I did start meditating when I was around 39, 40 years old. And I did it for quite a bit. Like first I started, Lachlan, maybe 10 minutes a day. And then I ended up doing it 30 minutes twice a day because I found it to be so incredibly valuable. And when I reflect back on what came from that is a deepening sense of trusting that we're connected to something so much more magnificent than I ever knew.
Exactly.
And it seemed like I let go of wanting to prove anything to anybody at that time. It was more about, I just want to follow my bliss. And being an accountant, like you being in finance, I wanted to do it, obviously, financially responsible, that I had money and had security and, you know, could pay the rent, could pay the mortgage, but it mattered less to me about those things. And I started to, I would say, almost care more and focus more on those other things, the relationships I had in my life, the playing in my life, to go actually live. I think so few of us actually truly live. And in your book, you reference that there were moments, as I read your book, you felt so alive. So the fact that you took this journey and adventure, and you, it's not a normal path most of us do. It's go on a walkabout and leave a job, you know, where you, especially you're in finance, and take this leap of faith. You know, in deepening your intuition and your balance, you mentioned balance. It's such another key word. What other key lesson, when you look back, you know, and you were going to tell a younger Lachlan, here's one of the key lessons I've learned from being on this getaway, what would it include?
I think the most important thing I realized, and I use that all of the time now when I'm working with rescued horses and helping them heal, is the importance of vitality. I think the more I traveled out there, the more I recognized and appreciated how, like, we have a physical form, but the energetic form is really the bedrock to the beauty, the natural beauty that we see around us, to the quality of our emotions, to the health we have, to what we bring into our life, and also, really importantly, how we deal with the challenges and all of the difficulties that are just part of being human. As we were talking about, being human is very messy. And I found that vitality, connecting with vitality, first understanding how important it was, and then realizing that every day I could do something to enhance or preserve or protect that vitality, that and just how critical that was to decisions, to relationships, to emotions, to every part of our life, that the energy side of the equation is, which we can't see. To me, it's actually the most important part of the equation to understand, because it then manifests in how we are physically, and manifests in how we are emotionally. And so vitality and the energetics of that, and this came from, you know, I read a lot of books. I would go out into a gorge in the morning, a stunning gorge, Ormiston Gorge, that I wrote about in the book. And I would take different books, and it may be a book on Buddhism, or it may be a book on philosophy, or it may be a really well-written adventure story or a travel story. And the one thing that kept coming out of that was just the importance of vitality. And that, for some reason, just really resonated. And that's something I've really tried to work hard with, both personally and also by giving that vitality out, giving that back to others, and being in relationships with either horses or humans or cats and dogs and all of the sentient beings we have around us, of creating a space or a dynamic where we're all recharging our vitality, where, you know, it fades over time. Traditional Chinese medicine helps us understand that. But if we can optimize what we can have at any point in time, to me, from an energy perspective, that was the most valuable lesson of the journey.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. Vitality is something I think we take for granted until it's gone. Yes, and then we exactly. realize, especially those of us that have had, you know, have health issues, and we go, wow, I was working 50, 60 hours a week, and all of a sudden, then when you lose your health, you realize how important it is. And vitality is critical. And I've learned that myself. So thank you. In terms of you staying balanced and working with horses, obviously horses, and I wanted to touch on this, Lachlan, are a huge part of your life. And you mentioned from a little boy, you really had a love and affinity for horses. And I know on your journey, you interacted with horses quite a bit. And You do so now, and I haven't really shared that part of what you're doing now with the audience. I'd love for you to share what made you want to work with horses. And it obviously, I know it's energy related, but I'd love to hear more about that, your journey with horses.
So I think that's almost, it's equivalent to the journey of being a human. And I think moving from the egoic self and moving into more balance with the intrinsic self. And so when I first started as a child, horses were, they've always just been inspiring and amazing and incredible. And so working with them, riding them, playing different sports as a youngster and then a teenager and then a young adult was something that just always, it always energized me. But then as I got older, I realized that the connection I was looking for, that I thought I could have riding, that there was actually a better way to have a deeper connection. And it was more the connection I was looking for than playing a particular game or a particular sport or going mustering cattle or something like that. It was actually the connection to the horse, almost as a conduit to a deeper connection with the natural world. I then started to, I decided, you know what, I want to start to do a little bit of learn some courses around helping horses. So I'd like to help them, not just work with them, but not in terms of wanting something, but giving something and helping them. And so I started out as a hoof trimmer. I was fascinated with what happened below the knee. The problem is when you enjoy figuring out frameworks and putting the big puzzle together, I quickly went above the knee. And so then I became an equine massage therapist. So now I knew the whole muscular skeletal system. That curiosity then took me more into the energy side of things, because the more I worked with horses, the more I listened to my practitioners and teachers, the more they referenced that so often the energetic side, the emotional side of what is happening to the horse, that's actually reflected in the physical form of the horse. And so I've continued to follow that path, and I started to do Reiki and then craniosacral and then most recently acupressure, equine acupressure. And all of that continued just to reinforce that the more we help the horse energetically, the more we help them turn off their nervous system, the more we help them release the emotional and the physical traumas that they hold in their body physically and energetically, the more we can actually create a sphere, a bubble, if you like, in which the horse can now start to heal itself. So much of what I do at rescues here in Denver or outside Denver is basically working with broken down, old, tired, traumatized horses and help give back to them their sense of vitality. And it starts out very small. It may just be a little bit of light in the eye or a little blink or a slight change in gait or movement, but helping them reconnect with their vitality, helping them reconnect with the energy that they have, and helping them to eliminate and remove the traumas that they've been exposed to for most of their life. I find it's energy work that allows me to do that best of all, and really then set the scene to help the horse figure out what's best for me and how do I heal, and let nature take its course.
You know, I'm also Reiki. I'm a Reiki master, so I understand the importance of energy. The older I get, how much more, and we've hit on that today, especially you can feel in individuals' energy, it's palatable, you know, when you walk in a room. And we all feel that first when we meet somebody. Within a minute or two, you can just get that sense of, you know, their vibration or their energy. But a horse, to work with a horse like that, it just makes me think of us as individuals. I do, you know, I get acupuncture done. I get a number of modalities done as well. And I think that helps me stay in balance and, you know, can benefit a horse that can also really help us, everything you just mentioned. And on that note, when you look at the Western world, and there's so many people out there, Lachlan, they're stuck in jobs that maybe they have absolutely no passion for. They're working all the time, they're burnt out. What would you encourage them to do?
And I think this comes from both personal experience and then the experience of others, particularly my equine friends, and see how they respond. I think the most critical factor is ultimately we're all part of the natural world. We come from the natural world. We have a, you know, humanity has a 2 million year evolutionary path. Horses have a 54 million year evolutionary path. And so the reality is that that's where we're from, that the earth is our home, the energy of the earth, the nutrients that we get from its water, from its plants, from its animals, the vitality that we get from the sun, the circadian rhythms that we get from the earth, that the best way we can start to heal ourselves outside what we need modern medicine for, and how given how critical that is. But as you start out to reconnect with that more intrinsic part of yourself, connect more with nature, because in many ways that is going to be the conduit through which your vitality will come back, that will recharge your true self, will help you reconnect with who you wanted to be or who you were at 5 or 6 when you intrinsically knew yourself. That you then potentially lose as the egoic side of our being wants us to be successful and fit in and have a house and a car and keep up with the Joneses and all of the societal pressures that we all have to live within and decide how to live within. And I think ultimately coming back to a much more simple interpretation of meds, right? Meditating. Let your mind. Open your mind to what it will tell you. Exercise, diet, sleep, the really simple ways of connecting with the earth and the energy of the earth, to me, that was the catalyst that helped me have a lot of really critical realizations that now play a much more significant part of my life today. And I feel it's also a really simple, elegant way to be able to reconnect with where we come from. And that's almost going home in a sense. And going home is where our vitality really comes from.
Replenishment, rejuvenation, everything you mentioned is so critical. And I would add laughter. I think
Yes.
laughter is so good for all of us, and especially, taking ourselves not so serious and enjoying life in the moment. I am learning to do that, Lachlan, too. So thank you. Beautiful tips for all of you out there that feel stuck. I hope you found value. I always find value from our discussions, Lachlan. You're amazing at the tips you offer, and I'm going to be working on my vitality today. So thank you so much for being a guest. I greatly appreciate it.
Eileen, thank you very much for the opportunity. I really appreciated it too. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you all for joining us in this journey today. We are so grateful that you're here. And if you would like to connect to one of the guests, I always share their information in the show notes on my website, which is jolenelenz.com. That's JOLINELENZ. And don't forget to also subscribe to the podcast. I'd certainly appreciate that. And I'm wishing you all much joy and fulfillment in your path ahead. Cheers, everybody.